We're here for a 1:30 oral argument. Are all the council ready? Karen, if you'd call the case, please.
The court will now call the United States Commercial Waterfront National Union versus Walmart Doors, Inc., and may it please the court, Mr. George, to administer the argument for 20 minutes for the appellant. And the first person to argue is Mr. Steve Willis from the appellee, at a total of 20 minutes. And the second person to argue is Mr. Peter Wally to argue 5 minutes for the appellee.
All right, fine. All right, fine. Is the appellant ready? Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is George Wazinski, and I'm counsel for the appellants. In this case, we argue that the National Labor Relations Act preempts Walmart's trespass case because it's based on the same conduct that is at issue in an unfair labor practices charge that Walmart filed. And it's clear that when analyzing National Labor Relations Act preemption, the focus is on conduct, not the legal elements of the causes of action. Even the Supreme Court in Sears held or stated that the pertinent inquiry is whether two potentially conflicting legal claims are brought to bear on the same conduct. The Supreme Court later in Davis said the same thing. It says, as the Garmin line of cases directs, the preemption inquiry is whether the conduct at issue is arguably prohibited by the National Labor Relations Act. The Court of Appeals in Texas in Banfield recognized that the focus is also conduct. And I think Walmart recognizes that as well at its brief at 10-11. The Supreme Court in the case Lockridge, that's in our papers, in our brief, held that it's not the formal legal elements of the cause of action that are focused, it's the conduct. And if the conduct is the same, then there's preemption. The case in Jones that we highlight in our brief, the court applied the same idea. There, the plaintiff argued that because the legal elements of his tortious interference with contract claim were different than the National Labor Relations Act violation, which was the plaintiff argued that by causing his discharge, the union interfered with the company's choice of bargaining representative. The plaintiff argued because the elements of those respective claims were different, that therefore the claims were not the same within the meaning of Sears, and therefore preemption shouldn't apply. The court rejected that argument. The court said that because what was central to both the tortious interference with contract claim and the National Labor Relations Act violation of interfering with the bargaining representative of the employer was the union's action in discharging the plaintiff. It's because of that conduct is the same, that the conduct was central to both the claim and the court claim, the tortious interference with contract tort claim, and the National Labor Relations Act violation, because they were both based on the union getting the plaintiff discharged, that conduct was the same, therefore the cause of action in court, the tortious interference with contract claim, was preempted. And this was true even though the plaintiff emphasized that for the National Labor Relations Act violation, the plaintiff had to show that the union caused his discharge coercively, that coercion was involved. But he emphasized that coercion was not necessary for the state cause of action, the tortious interference with contract claim. The Supreme Court said it didn't make any difference because at the end of the day, it was the union causing his discharge, that conduct that was central to both claims. Therefore, they were similar within the meaning of Sears, and therefore the National Labor Relations Act preempted the tortious interference with contract claim.
Can I get you to be careful that I understand fully? I first off want to say thank you to you folks that worked on the in doing the appellant's briefing, because I've been reading paper for 47 years, and it's certainly nice to get briefs that are with spiral binders that I can take my own time at looking at instead of studying in front of the internet. As I read all of your work, this is summary judgment proceeding. I didn't see that you raised any real issues on fact questions in any respect in your briefing.
The briefing to the trial court, to the district court, or the briefing here? The
briefing here in our court.
That's correct. At the end of the day, the appellants, both at both levels, concede that these events occurred. What we would dispute was not that they occurred, but the characterization in some of the affidavits that that the appellant or that Walmart filed with the court, where some managers said there was blocking or that people were intimidated or things like this. Those characterizations we dispute, but the basic facts, no, we don't.
So we're on a matter of law all the way through in terms of the way that you've approached this case as the appellant. We're dealing with the law and the points of error that you raise, and we're not really dealing with factual questions except insofar as they might apply in trying to differentiate between a state claim and a claim under the National Relations Board.
That's correct. That's certainly correct with respect to the preemption argument. In addition to preemption, we also argue, make a easements argument.
I was only addressing your preemption argument.
Okay, no, that's correct.
Now, let me ask you to give a bit of a time to what's raised in the briefing about the 10th Amendment.
About the 10th Amendment? Well,
yes, I'm talking about the reservation of powers to the state that aren't specifically granted by Congress to a federal agency or a federal court or a federal jurisdiction, and how that applies to the questions that you raise on preemption under the National Labor Relations Act as far as the claim for a trespassing action in Texas.
Well, I would respond this way. The Supremacy Clause of the Constitution is the basis for the preemption doctrine. And the preemption doctrine is a constitutional doctrine, and it's been around since the 1940s. And the court has, the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, has consistently held that the Supremacy Clause applies. And then when Congress has passed a law like the National Labor Relations Act, pretty much taking over the entire field, almost the entire field of labor relations, that any state cause of action that comes within that scope is preempted. And the court has never held, no court has ever held, that that is an invalid interpretation of the Supremacy Clause under the 10th Amendment. I think the 10th Amendment balance would be when, with, for example, the local interest exception, that when the state's police powers are involved, when there's violence, or when there's property damage, or when there's threats, or when there's a malicious defamation, that when those sorts of police powers are at issue before the state court, then under the 10th Amendment, then the balance, the line would be drawn that the state has concurrent jurisdiction with the National Labor Relations Act over that violence.
Isn't that what trespass and nuisance is? Is claims that the state has police powers to control that?
That's correct, but it's not every police power that comes within the local interest exception. It's limited. For example, trespass. No court has ever, except for a couple of the cases that Walmart's brought against the appellants, no court has ever held that trespass, for example, fits within the local union exception, local interest exception. Rather, the cases where the courts say that trespass fits the local interest exception, that's a dictum. None of those cases involve trespass.
Well, in fact, there's 4 out of 5 district courts that have addressed this very issue in Walmart cases and have found no preemption. And those are more recent cases than your Jones and Sears and the 20-year-old cases that you're citing to this court, aren't they?
That's correct. But I think it's 3 of them based their decision on the local interest exception. I think it's Colorado bases it on that there are different issues. And Colorado held that conduct was irrelevant to the analysis. And I think Colorado got it wrong. But, for example, the state of Maryland, the Court of Special Appeals in Maryland, the Intermediate Court of Appeals, held that because of the local interest exception, that there was no preemption. The Supreme Court, the highest court in Maryland, has granted cert of that decision. So, I mean, I'm hopeful. I don't know exactly why, but that decision is now no longer totally controlling in Maryland. Likewise, in California, the appeals court in California ruled that because of the local interest exception, that the National Labor Relations Act did not preempt Walmart's trespass case. There, the panel on its own vacated its decision. That's being re-argued next week in Los Angeles. And so of those 3 decisions, 2 of those decisions are no longer controlling, even for the states of Maryland and California. But beyond that, no other court other than, I think it's Florida, has held that trespass fits the local interest exception. And I think one of the reasons, it's something that occurred to me preparing for this oral argument. The way Walmart pled its trespass case illustrates why trespass doesn't fit within the local interest exception. When the local interest exception applies, it applies across the board. It applies to arguably protected preemption It applies to arguably prohibited preemption. It applies to union representatives, to workers, to the company. It applies to everyone. It applies across the board. For example, if a worker is on a picket line and it gets involved with violence, the local interest exception applies, and it doesn't matter. So there, the state has jurisdiction. It doesn't matter who it is. Now, Walmart's trespass case is limited only to non-employees. It has not alleged that workers who were joining these events and engaged in the same exact conduct and participating in the same exact events were trespassing. Yet Walmart's trespass theory is this: by engaging in this conduct, by holding these events at Walmart stores, the appellants exceeded Walmart's invitation to come onto its property and therefore trespass. That's Walmart's theory. That same exact theory would apply to workers. Walmart's workers who join those events or actually held events on their own.
Well, since the National Labor Relations Board deals with labor relations, then employees might have a claim against an employee might be different. The claims in these cases were, in fact, had nothing to do with labor relations, did they? They had to do with trespass and nuisance.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with that for the reasons that Walmart filed its unfair labor practice charge. Walmart
withdrew that, too. So that's not like, you know, they're conceding that, even though that's how you argued that they were conceding, they don't concede.
With all due respect, Mr. Wheels is an authority on labor law throughout the country among management attorneys, not union attorneys, but management attorneys. And when he filed that charge, he did so because he had a basis for it. And he believed that the board had jurisdiction. And he believed that these events violated the National Labor Relations Act.
So we're supposed to take that leap with you, the fact that he filed something that was later withdrawn and he is a expert in the field, we're supposed to take the leap with you that means that this is preempted.
Well, no, the leap is not that it's preempted. It's the first step towards preempted. Preemption applies when the conduct is arguably prohibited by the National Labor Relations Act. By filing this charge and arguing that these events violated the National Labor Relations Act because the way they impacted customers, managers, and Walmart's operations in addition to workers, that's his theory.
And but they were also arguing that these protests were in an effort to coerce employees not to support labor unions or not to be a part of a labor union. That's not the issue in these state court cases.
With all due respect, that's not correct. You go back and look at their summary of events that they filed with their unfair labor practice charge. I think out of the 70-some events, there is nothing that could be reasonably characterized as intimidation or coercion of workers. If anything, the only people who are upset are some customers. Go back and look at it. There are two ways to violate this provision of the National Labor Relations Act. One would be a union representative going up to a worker and saying, look, unless you join the union, I'm gonna wreck your car, I'm gonna puncture your tires, all right? That's one way, direct coercion, right? The other way is, and then they cited the cases, we cited the cases in our brief, is where it's not that direct, where the union goes into the workplace and impacts people other than employees, and that violates Section AB1A. For example, the Hillhaven case from California. It's the same exact violation, a different violation than in Sears. The object doesn't make any difference. The objective doesn't make any difference. It's conduct. You go and look at the facts of Hillhaven in California, and when the union goes into this nursing home, they're really impacting the patients and the patients' families and a manager. A manager said, I felt intimidated. A manager said that. Now, you go in and you read it. There's no facts at all there where the union is directly trying to coerce or intimidate any worker. Yet the board issued a complaint. It was going to prosecute the union. It was then settled. But the board found a violation. And when you look at the facts there, it's clear that this way of violating the Section AB1A by these events impacting customers and managers and Walmart's operations is really not the same thing as what Walmart's argument's brief, making it sound like their theory, their argument to the board, was this one-on-one coercion where a participant was threatening a worker or grabbing a worker unless the worker joined in on to participate in an event. It's a different theory. Now, I grant you, Your Honor, that had Walmart argued a different case to the National Labor Relations Board, had Walmart argued that not these entire events and all of them across the country violated the National Labor Relations Act, but instead that during one event, during one flash mob, there was someone who approached a worker and threatened him, right, or approached a worker and punched him, And they're focusing on that one instance where the representative punched a worker, and that was their theory, and that's what they argued. Very different case. Very different case. But that's not their case. They argue that all of these events violated the National Labor Relations Act because their impact, not only on workers indirectly, but directly on customers and managers and Walmart's operations, which reads much like their complaint in this case. So with all due respect, I don't think they did argue that. Our interpretation, by the way, of the local interest exception is consistent with the appeals court in Texas, its decision in Central Beverage. I mean, when you read that decision, it's cited in our brief, that decision talks about the local interest exception the same way Sears did and the way we do, and that is there's this litany of these cases that involve violence, property damage, threats, intentional infliction of emotional distress that's based on outrageous conduct, and defamation when it involves actual malice. And so I would submit that our interpretation of local interest exception is also consistent with this court's interpretation. Concurrent jurisdiction. Walmart starts its brief by implying that for instances like this trespass case, that there's concurrent jurisdiction between the National Labor Relations Board and courts. Walmart is just flat out wrong for two reasons. First, if you look at Sears at 436 U.S. at 199, note 29, Sears holds this, that where applicable, the arguably prohibited preemption doctrine completely preempts state court jurisdiction. If you look at all the cases that Walmart cites and that we cite, not once did the court hold that that preemption applied and there was concurrent jurisdiction. In fact, the only time that there's concurrent jurisdiction is when the local interest exception applies. So, for example, the picketer who is violent on the picket line might be violating the National Labor Relations Act and at the same time committing a crime of assault and battery. There's concurrent jurisdiction, but other than when the local interest exception applies, there's no concurrent jurisdiction. If I finish early, can I reserve time for my rebuttal, additional time?
Yes.
Okay. So the final point I would make is that Walmart accuses us of trying to create a union trespass exception in the state of Texas. We're not trying to do that. This case is unique. In fact, I've been practicing since 1988, however many years that is, and I've never seen a case where an employer went in, first filed an unfair labor practice charge, argued that certain conduct violated the National Labor Relations Act, withdrew that charge, and then refiled this basically the same case in court, arguing that now this conduct violates trespass law. Rather, what companies, in my experience, normally do, and what Walmart's done historically, like 10, 15 years ago, is go into court and just seek, ask for an injunction and not file an unfair labor practice charge. Or, like in the case that's cited in our papers and Walmart's papers, it's District 65, it's a National Labor Relations Board case, there what the employer did was just file a charge and just relied on the National Labor Relations Board to kick the union out of these workplaces in New York in the mid-60s. It rarely happens that an employer does both. In fact, the only other time that really comes close to this is that Hillhaven case, where there in Hillhaven's, the California case, where I think it's like 15 or 20 or 20, 25 union representatives go into a nursing home and they talk to workers and they distribute literature. And what happened was the next day the employer got an injunction enjoining the union from going into the property, and then the day after that they filed an unfair labor practice charge. Well, what happens there is that the board was going to prosecute the union for violating the same provision that's at issue here, 8B1A of the National Labor Relations Act, and issued a complaint. It was settled. Then the union moved, because of that charge, that the trespass case should be dismissed, and because of preemption. And that's what the court did. The court held in the case that because of that charge, it showed that the conduct also violated the National Labor Relations Act, that they were dismissing the trespass case. And importantly, as to the local interest exception, the court said, but remember, now this trespass case involving this peaceful trespass is preempted and it's dismissed. But If the union comes back in and engages in violent conduct, you come back to me, and I'll give you that injunction, because that makes sense in a local interest exception. I think I have about like a minute left, but I'll stop here.
Mr. Wazinski, let me just ask you, when I was a small child, I thought I understood trespassing. You've mentioned it more than any other word in your argument. What do you mean by trespassing?
I mean two things. First, Walmart's theory here is if I extend an invitation to you to come onto my property and I place conditions on it, you exceed those conditions, you're trespassing, right?
Right.
So that's one theory. Then the other theory of trespass, there are several, but another theory of trespass is the one that was involved in Sears. Sears, when you look at Sears makes it clear that the plaintiff there is not arguing conduct. In fact, it says that the plaintiff, the Sears, the company, did not object to the union's conduct, to the union's activities. They just didn't want to be right here, you know, move it. So the court emphasizes that the plaintiff's trespass theory in Sears was location. And so that's another way to violate trespass. So if instead of arguing this invitation, you know, we exceeded the invitation by holding these events, if Walmart had filed the same charge that it did and argued it the same way, but argued the Sears trespass theory, that is, I don't object to your conduct. I don't object to your flash mobs or anything like this. I just don't want you to do it here. If their complaint read just as location, we are in a very different situation. But if you look at Walmart's complaint, it's clear that they are objecting mightily to our actions. In fact, at the end of the day, if we had just gone into the stores and talked to workers about how the Dallas Cowboys beat my Washington Redskins on Sunday or about this political election year or something like this, we wouldn't be here. So they're clearly objecting to the conduct, and that's their theory.
Well, when you talk about trespassing, you're speaking of against my property. And I don't get what evidence there was to prove up what my property consisted of these cases. And is it the same in every Walmart store or all of them?
Well, I can speak to this. Mr. Wheels can speak to it more. Walmart owns property in Texas like every other state in like three different ways. One is they own the whole location, or they have a ground lease for the whole location. So they have rights of exclusive possession not only to the interior of their stores, but to all the common areas, the parking lots and sidewalks. Then there are occasions when Walmart locates a store in a shopping center, in which case Walmart's property rights there are just to the interior of, or let me put it this way, the rights of exclusive possession are just to the interior of the store building, but not the common areas, not the parking lot or sidewalk in front of its stores. Then there's the third category that's at issue, and a point that we make in our brief, but I'm not going to be arguing it here today, where Walmart owns property, a store here, and it's right next to a shopping center. And there are these cross easements going back and forth, giving the rights of each other's customers and suppliers and employees to walk across and park on the parking lots. So that's the three different ways that Walmart holds property in Texas.
And did they prove up what property interests they had in each piece of property?
Well, not really. But in fairness, we didn't contest it. I wasn't at the original hearing, but I know the record, and the record doesn't have a bunch of deeds. Actually, all the deeds and leases are in my office. They were produced in discovery, and I use them for this other argument. But we're not making that argument here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
I don't know how you ended up on time, but I'm afraid the questions and the answers may have taken you through your full 20 minutes.
Oh, I think so. Thanks.
Thank you. Counsel, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Steve Wheelis on behalf of Walmart, and with the court's permission, I'll be addressing the preemption question. And to the extent that you have any questions or inquiries on the other three issues, my colleague, Mr. Wabi, is available for those as well. So let me take that last question first. In the lower court, in the district court, Walmart did prove up all of its property interests. It's undisputed that Walmart has the exclusive right to control the property that are subject, that's subject to the injunctions, and that's undisputed. And I think Mr. Wyszynski, when he got to the end of his comments, acknowledged that, that's not disputed. So what else is not disputed is that the defendants here went on to Walmart's private property repeatedly, flagrantly, and engaged in all manner of activity, including blocking of ingress and egress, and the District Court Judge Pittman found such blocking, and he enjoined such blocking. And I believe if you ask my colleague, Mr. Wyszynski, during his rebuttal time, he would acknowledge and admit that there is no preemption of blocking or egress claims in state court. That's not an issue here, and that was a huge part of what was going on. So let me back up, if I could, just a moment, and start at the beginning. And that's with Judge, or then-Judge Sutterth and Judge Pittman in the district court. We believe, we respectfully submit, that they got it right in determining that there is no preemption of this state law claim. And they did that in large part because of a very important case, a case that my colleagues from the union struggle mightily to avoid, and that's the Sears case, the Sears versus Carpenter's case from 1978. It's not very often that we have a Supreme Court case directly on point, but we do here. And in Sears, the court said and held that federal labor law does not preempt a state trespass claim, even where the conduct that takes place during the trespass might constitute or could constitute or did constitute an unfair labor practice. And the court said that as just as clearly and expressly as you could ask for. The court said at page 196 of the Sears decision, quote, first, there existed a significant state interest in protecting the citizens from the challenged conduct. So when Mr. Wyszynski says that there's no court that has ever said that trespass is a matter of significant state interest, a deeply rooted interest, a local interest, he maybe missed that part of Sears. Sears said that there was no preemption there because first, there existed a significant state interest in protecting the citizens from the challenged conduct. And then the second part of its analysis, the court says, although the challenged conduct occurred in the course of a labor dispute and an unfair labor practice could have been filed, the exercise of state jurisdiction over the tort claim entailed little risk of interference with the regulatory jurisdiction of the board. But it doesn't stop there. The Sears court went on to explain. The Sears court says, quote, although the federal, arguable federal violation and the state tort trespass arose in the same factual context, I'll say that again, in the same factual setting, the respective controversies presented to the state and federal forums would not have been the same, unquote. So when Mr. Wyszynski talks about, oh, the conduct that was issued in the unfair labor practice charge and the conduct that was at issue in the state trespass claim, those are overlapping facts. The Supreme Court in Sears says it doesn't matter. It's the legal controversy that is at issue. What is the legal controversy at issue in the unfair labor practice charge that Walmart filed? And by the way, I'm gonna get that page where Mr. Wyszynski said that I was a great labor lawyer. I'm gonna frame. I'm gonna put it up in my office. Thank you for that, George.
Everything you all say here is recorded, sir.
Yes, sir. I know. I emphasize it. But the key point here is that the unfair labor practice charge that was filed alleged that the defendants went into stores, inside Walmart stores, and they engaged in such abusive, disruptive behavior in the face of the employees that it violated the employees' rights to be free from coercion under federal law. That's not my characterization. The unfair labor practice charge at, this is volume 2 of the clerk's record, page 552, says that the defendants violated federal labor law, quote, by which the UFCW, the United Federation of Commercial Workers, restrained and coerced employees in the exercise of their Section 7 rights, unquote. So Walmart did not file an unfair labor practice charge claiming that the defendants had violated labor law by trespassing. It filed an unfair labor practice charge that said they violated federal labor law engaging in employee coercion while they were trespassing. That's exactly like Sears. In Sears, the defendant union was picketing on Sears' private property. And the Supreme Court said two different controversies. One controversy is whether the picketing on the private property during the trespass violated federal labor law. The other controversy is whether or not they were engaged in unauthorized entry on land. And Justice Weil, your understanding of trespass is the same as mine, unauthorized entry on land. That's what happened in Sears. That's what happened here. All Walmart wants is for these folks to take their protests and move them a few feet to the public sidewalks that are around all of these properties. That's all they want. And Walmart wants them to stop the blocking.
So is it your position that the courts have concurrent, or the board and the state court has concurrent jurisdiction only when the local interest exception applies?
Yes. And one thing more, those peripheral interests where the labor law interest and the state court interest are, they are so disconnected that they are, one is peripheral to the other, and then there's the local interest cases. Supreme Court told us that here, when we're talking about trespass, that's a matter of significant state interest, a local interest. But we don't have to guess. We can just look to what the court said in its next preemption case, Sears 1978, Belknap versus Hale 5 years later, 1983. What does the Supreme Court 5 years later in its very next preemption case, what does it say about Sears? Well, it says, quote, and this is at page 509 and 510 of the Belknap decision, 463 U.S. at 509. Under Garmin. Now, what's Garmin? Garmin was the 1959 case that set out this whole preemption framework in the first instance. Under the arguably prohibited prong of the Garmin test, the Supreme Court in Belknap in 1983 says, under Garmin, a state may regulate conduct that is of only peripheral concern to the act, or which is so deeply rooted in local law that the court should not assume that Congress intended to preempt the application of state law. In Lynn versus Plant Guard Workers, that's the defamation case. In Farmers versus Carpenter, that's the emotional distress case. And then what's the third case that the Supreme Court cites when it lists the cases that are subject to the, either the peripheral interest or the deeply rooted interest exception? Finally, in Sears Roebuck versus Company versus Carpenters, we held that a state trespass action was permissible and not preempted since the action concerned only the location of the picketing, while the arguable unfair labor practice would focus on the object of the picketing. So the Supreme Court tells us in Sears that trespass is not a matter that is that involves conduct to be regulated in the same way as a unfair labor practice that might occur during the trespass. And then it reinforces and reiterates that in its very next preemption case. And contrary to what my colleague says, numerous cases have held that that trespass under Sears was identified by the court as a local interest case. Let me just quote here, and this is not in our papers because I'm surprised that we heard this today. This is at for the record, so you have it. 2014 Westlaw 4694802, Ninth Circuit case, Retail Property Trust versus United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners. At slip opinion 10 there, the Ninth Circuit. This is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Quote, by contrast, in Sears, citation, the court found deeply local interests to be at stake, such that the Garmin preemption was inappropriate, unquote. Also, in the only Texas court to deal with this issue, at least that we have on in a reported decision, is the decision of Harvey Industries versus Union of Electronic Workers, cited at page 18 of our brief.
There, the federal district court said, quote, "At least two of the state law claims raised in the original petition fall within the class of state claims which the Supreme Court has already determined are not preempted by the LMRA," which is another way to say the National Labor Relations Act. And then the court listed, quote, "violence, defamation, the intentional infliction of emotional distress, obstruction of access to property, and trespass," unquote. That's from the federal district court sitting here in Texas.
What appellant has argued is that the flaw in your case is that you've alleged trespass because it exceeds the scope of the invitation instead of trespass based totally on location. What's your response to that?
I don't understand that argument. I'm going to answer your question to the best of my ability, but that argument makes no sense, because in order to show trespass in the environment where you have extended a limited invitation to the public to shop for the purpose of shopping, you have to allege that they exceeded the scope of that invitation in order to make out a trespass claim. That is black letter 101 trespass law. And so when Mr. Wyszynski says that alleging the, what he's really, what I think he's really trying to say is that by setting out the conduct that happened during these trespassory demonstrations in order to show that they exceeded the limited scope of the shopping invitation and to show irreparable harm and to show blocking, in order that by doing that, that Walmart somehow engaged in like content specific regulation, raising a specter of some kind of First Amendment violation. Of course, First Amendment doesn't apply on private property. So I would respond by saying I think it's smoke and mirrors. The issue is solely and only, please move to public property. Please don't block. That's all we're asking for. And it's, you know, I think it is, you know, we see from Sears, Belknap, Harvey, that the conduct to be regulated is different. Those courts all say the same thing. Conduct to be regulated in a state trespass claim is different than the conduct to be regulated before the National Labor Relations Board. In the Labor Board charge, you have to prove employee coercion. In the state trespass claim, you prove unauthorized entry. The state court doesn't think about or look at or consider employee coercion in ruling on a state trespass claim, nor does the Labor Board talk about or think about or rely on trespass to make a finding as to whether or not employee coercion occurred. Employee coercion can occur anywhere, and we cite those cases in our brief, I think it's page 26, where employee coercion has been found at multiple locations away from the employer's property. And so we know from the Supreme Court and from the Eastern District of Washington and many other courts that trespass claims are not preempted even where unfair labor practice conduct can take could or did take place during the trespass. We don't have to rely solely on all those courts. The Labor Board, not here, not arguing that it has jurisdiction, it tells us repeatedly that it doesn't have jurisdiction over trespass claims. Retail Stores Employees Local 101, cited in our papers at page 23, quote, this is the Labor Board talking, quote, "Whether or not the union's conduct constitutes a trespass is a matter for the state and local authorities, and we make no comment thereon. The only issue here is whether the union's admitted conduct restrains and coerces employees within the meaning of Section 8B1A of the Act," unquote. Hard to get any more express than that. Metro Regional Council of Carpenters, quote, "Although the union's conduct may violate trespassing laws, I conclude that it doesn't violate the Act," unquote. In National Organization of Master Mates and Pilots, quote, "The act of trespass by the union did not of itself violate the Act." So the Labor Board doesn't claim jurisdiction over trespass claims, nor could it. Not once in the history of the Labor Board, in 90 years, has it ever gone to court to get an injunction. Doesn't have power to issue its own injunctions. Never once has it gone to court to get an injunction to stop trespass. In the case that my friend Mr. Wyszynski cited, the local 825 case, where he said that, you know, that they pay the board pays attention to trespass, that was a stipulated settlement. where the union agreed, among other things, to stop flipping cars, stop breaking glass, stop waving pistols, spitting on employees, and it agreed not to trespass and bang on the doors of the employees' facility. So this is not a case where the labor board has grappled with, you know, property rights and trespass claims. This was a stipulated agreement. So it's very important, I think, as I wrap up here, to remember a couple of things. First of all, the defendants, quote, have no intent of Walmart to have Walmart recognize or bargain with defendants as the representative of Walmart employees, unquote. That's in the record at volume 5, page 1906. So there's no associational or organizational issue here. This is just the defendants wanting to disrupt Walmart's business, in many cases to block ingress and egress. And one of them that's worth calling out is at the clerk's record 5, page 1811, where the employees engaged in, or the demonstrators, the defendants engaged in blocking activity, and one of the defendants turned and said to the manager standing by, "Are you scared now?" Threat of violence. It's what it feels like to me. It might not to others, but to the extent that there's some threat of violence required, the Supreme Court in Sears at page 206 talks about how repeated trespass in the face of demand to leave lays the seeds of violence. If think about any your home, any business, somebody keeps coming on your property and you can't go to state court to get an injunction to stop it. What's your recourse? You either accept the trespass or you engage in self-help. And I promise you, when people engage in self-help to stop trespassers, especially when there's 30, 50, 100 of them, the threat of violence is there. The other thing to note and to emphasize here is that the defendants do not claim that they engaged in any protected activity. So when you read Sears, you'll see that there's two sections of Sears where the Sears court talks about arguably prohibited conduct and arguably protected conduct. Arguably protected conduct is a situation, for example, if the employer discriminated against the union vis-a-vis the Kiwanis Club or something. The other exception is if they're in a mining camp up in the mountains and you can't get to the employees any other way. But for those two exceptions, the arguably prohibited prong doesn't apply to trespass ever, and the defendants do not claim that any of their activity was arguably protected. So we're only dealing with the arguably prohibited section of the Sears decision. That's pages 195 to 198. If you read that, it gives you the whole primer on all of the law and the holding. Then what the defendant's conduct and their arguments here brings into sharp focus what they're really asking for. What they're really asking for is a free pass to break the law in Texas. It is a crime to enter onto the property of another having been told you can't do that. And that's exactly what they want to do. And let me quote Mr. Brzezinski. This is at Clerk's Record, Volume 7, pages 2231. Quote, "I'll stipulate to the wording you just had that absent an injunction, it is the intent of the defendants to continue to hold actions inside Walmart stores and on the parking lots adjacent to it, and in actions being basically what you've defined, that would be things in the nature of parades, handbilling, rallies, demonstrations, video bombing, the flash mobs, and things like this, the sort of things, the sort of actions that Walmart alleged in the complaint," unquote. If they would just not break the law, we wouldn't be here. If they just moved their demonstrations a few feet to the public sidewalk and not block, we wouldn't be here. But they won't, and we are. And so we respectfully ask that you affirm the decisions of then-Judge Shuttleworth and Judge Pittman and hold that the state of Texas does have the right to protect public safety and health and private property rights, and affirm the lower court's decision.
Mr. Whalis.
Yes, sir.
There's one sentence in all the briefing that the appellee supplied that says, back on the question of the first filing with the National Labor Relations Board.
Yes, sir.
That the reason for the withdrawal from the National Labor Relations Board litigation was based on a business decision. Can you illuminate on that, Eddie?
I can. The unfair labor practice charge was filed, I believe it was March 3rd, and the state court complaint was filed in June, so about 4 months. And in that 4 months, crickets. Now, I don't know what the labor board was doing with the union, but in terms of giving us any feedback, the company, any feedback of what it was going to do or, you know, if it was going to do anything, remembering that during that time, these demonstrations were clicking along, boom, 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 boom. And so because the company had no feedback, but it was being asked almost routinely to submit this, submit that, do this position statement, what about this, produce these witnesses, Walmart decided that it was pouring money down a dry hole in terms of getting any action to protect employee rights from coercion. And so it made a business decision to focus its efforts on the state court, which is the only jurisdiction.
Thank you very much. I didn't mean to extend your time. But
yes, sir. Thank you. Anything else for me? Thank you.
There's 5 minutes, I guess, left for Mr. Wabi.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, it's an honor to... Are we out of time? Okay. It's an honor to be before you. There was a couple of quick comments that I wanted to make with the Court's acceptance. The first is that their argument that they haven't addressed in their time today, but it is in their briefing, relating to easement rights and competing cross-easements, which is basically this. If I have, if Party A issues an easement to Party B, then Party A loses the right to exclude Party C from its private property. That's essentially their argument. And the problem with that is it upends about 150 years or so of Texas law. I mean, imagine the consequences. If you're a mineral interest owner and you lease your mineral interests to XTO, and XTO has an easement to come onto your surface right to drill on your property, under their argument, then you've given up the right to exclude anybody else from trespassing on your property. As soon as you've given XTO an easement to come onto your property to drill, then you've somehow given up your rights to control your private property. That, of course, is not the state of Texas law. That's why there's no citations in their briefing in support of that proposition. And the talk about taking a leap, that would be an unprecedented leap that would upend the real property legal framework that we've enjoyed in the state for so long. And the second point to make, Your Honor, is that we are here on an abuse of discretion standard. I've heard no argument and really no briefing as to how Judge Pittman abused his discretion. How was his decision arbitrary? They might not agree with it, but how is his decision legally arbitrary? How was his decision legally unreasonable? How was his holding and his entry of the injunction without reference to any guiding principles? On the contrary, their briefing has no citations for the propositions, some of which, whether it's cross easements or private nuisance, that they submit to this court and encourage this court to adopt as the law in this state. And they're here saying that Judge Pittman acted unreasonably. Well, what he did was fully consistent with not only what Judge Sedgwick did, but what states around the country have done and what states and what courts and judges in this state have done for over 100 years. It's their briefing that has no citation, that's unreasonable, that's arbitrary. And I've heard nothing with respect to how His Honor abused his discretion. It's not just that they disagree. As Your Honors know, it's a standard much higher and one that we've heard nothing about. And so for those reasons, I echo Mr. Willis's respectful request that you would uphold Judge Pittman's decision in every respect. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wabi. Any questions? Now, counsel, we're ready for you again.
Thank you. Leading off with where Mr. Willis ended up, if you look at the affidavits that are in the record, and if you look at the videotapes that Walmart filed with its motion for the temporary injunction and its motion for summary judgment, these actions were not the sort of picketing that you saw in the 1950s and 60s where there's a bunch of violence, where people are being threatened, where people are being punched, where there's property damage, when strikers or people crossing the strike line are trying to drive their car through, where their cars are being injured. These were actually, I would consider them to be fun events. Look at the affidavits. The affidavits start out by saying that there was blocking. But then when you read what the description is, it says that customers had to walk through the flash mob. Watch the video of the flash mob, the thriller. It's a fun Halloween-type action that occurred inside the store, and you have customers watching. You can see in the corner of the video, customers watching and laughing. You see employees clapping along. And that's true not only in Texas, but across the country. There were, I think, hundreds, if not thousands of events between 2011 and a couple of years ago. And not one involved violence. Not one. No one was cited for any violence. No one was charged with any violence. There was no one even arrested. Well, there was one person arrested in an event that we had nothing to do with. And that was not violence. That was, I think, trespassing in California. But of all those events, there was no violence. There was no damage. There was no property damage. There were no threats. There just weren't. And Walmart's affidavits here show it. Along those lines, the speculation of violence doesn't cut it under National Labor Relations Act preemption. If you look at the case of Youngdahl, it's a Supreme Court case. There the plaintiff argued that there may be violence in the future. And the Supreme Court said two things. He said, first, to the extent that the trial court's injunction enjoined violence, that's good. That fits the local interest exception. That injunction stands. To the extent it enjoined peaceful picketing, I think was at issue there, then it went beyond and it was preempted, beyond its authority, and it was preempted. And the court also said, if there's got to be violence, if there's no violence, speculation of violence doesn't cut it. That doesn't justify avoiding preemption. Mr. Willis started out by reading from the Supreme Court case Belknap. I really invite you to go and read it. It's at pages 509, 510. It's 463 U.S. Mr. Willis is correct. The paragraph starts out by saying under Garmin, they talk about the local interest exception. They talk about the Lynn case, which is the defamation case, the Farmer's case, which is the tortious infliction of emotional distress case. Then it goes on and it shifts gears. And it's clear what the court is saying there. It says, finally, in Sears, we held that the trespass case there was not preempted, not because of the local interest exception. It says because the controversies were different. It's because there was no need to get to the local interest exception in Sears because the preliminary analysis of whether or not the controversies that were central to the trespass case in Sears and the theoretical unfair labor practice were different. So this court in Belknap says that Sears held that the trespass case was not preempted because the claims were too different, not because of the local interest exception. And so I really think that Mr. Willis, or I should say Walmart, is misreading that part of Belknap, and rather it supports our position on that. With respect to this retail property trust case, the Ninth Circuit case, there the court, in one part of its decision, says that that Sears held that the local or Sears held that the trespass claim there was not preempted because of the local interest exception. They say that one place, and they cite that. I invite you to look at this. I should be able to give you the cite here. They cite the syllabus of the Supreme Court's decision in Sears. The syllabus. The Ninth Circuit cited the syllabus for that proposition. They did not cite any part of Sears. Moreover, in another part of the decision, the same Ninth Circuit decision in Retail Property Trust, the court talks about the local interest exception. Here's what it says. It says the Supreme Court has recognized that the local interests included violence, imminent threats to public order, because the compelling state interest in the maintenance of domestic peace. The examples of this is the Ninth Circuit saying, the examples of local interest exception is threats of violence, libel, intentional infliction of mental distress, but there the court doesn't include trespass. Moreover, in the Ninth Circuit, again, this is the problem. In the Ninth Circuit case in Retail Property Trust, by the way, that is at 768 at 952 and 953. Then, and the cite in the Ninth Circuit case where it cites to the syllabus is 768 F3rd at 942, and I've got 952 here. I don't know why I have two. Moreover, And this is that from 951 in the case. That case didn't even involve Garmin Sears preemption. That case did not involve arguably prohibited preemption. Again, the court, it's another example of a court that's talking about Sears holding that the local interest exception includes trespass, and it's pure dictum. That case involved a different NRA preemption. And this is at 951 and 960 in the case, where the parties concede that Garmin preemption, Garmin Sears preemption, is not in play here. Garmin preemption was not at issue in the case, in the Ninth Circuit case. So again, what Mr. Willis was referring to is pure dictum. Two more points. In Jones, the Jones court held that the NRA preempted the tortious interference with contract claim there, right? There's no question about that. In the Parker case, that's an 11th Circuit case, the court there, the Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, held that the National Labor Relations Act preempted a fraud and a misrepresentation claim, right? In Valentin, Valentin is a federal district court case out of Texas. I think that involved a breach of contract claim there. The court there, as upheld by the Fifth Circuit, held that the National Labor Relations Act preempted breach of contract. The board, the National Labor Relations Board, has no jurisdiction over any of those claims. It has no jurisdiction to find that fraud was committed, that misrepresentation was committed, that a breach of contract occurred, or that someone tortiously interfered with someone else's contract. So the fact that the board doesn't have jurisdiction over a state claim is really irrelevant, because if that were the standard, there would be no preemption, because the board has no jurisdiction over torts, over state claims. It just doesn't. It has only violations of the National Labor Relations Act does it have jurisdiction over. So the fact that the board doesn't have jurisdiction to technically find trespass is irrelevant. It doesn't make any difference. At the end of the day, the preemption analysis goes to what's the conduct. It's avoiding conflicting claims over the same conduct. And to that end, the last point that I make is that what was Walmart really doing when it filed this charge? Was it really concerned about its workers, or was it trying to get a remedy where the union would be kicked out of its stores, like the remedy it got from the trial court? I would submit it's the latter, and here's why. Walmart files the charge arguing that these events violated the National Labor Relations Act. The remedy would have been an order, a cease and desist order from the National Labor Relations Board saying stop going on their property to hold events. That's what the remedy would have been, the same exact remedy that Walmart got from the trial court here, from the district court here. So what happens is that Walmart files a charge, and the board is actually actively investigating. I was just thinking, probably 35 witnesses that the board interviewed. I filed a position statement in early May. The board was moving pretty quickly on their charge. But Walmart withdrew its charge and decided to file these trespass cases. That's what it represented to the court in Arkansas. It said, we withdrew the charge so we could pursue the trespass-related case in state court, right? They withdrew the trespass-related claim from the board, filed it in courts around the country. If Walmart had really filed that charge, not for its own interest, but for its workers' interest, what would Walmart have done? Instead, I submit, Walmart would have left that charge with the National Labor Relations Board to protect its workers, if the workers are really its concern. And it would have done something that would have been totally consistent, file these trespass cases and leave the board charge in place. But when Walmart withdrew the charge, I submit that it's really conceding there that the whole point of the charge the whole time was to protect its property rights and to get an order kicking the union off its property, the same order that it got here. And at the end of the day, I submit that that's maybe the most telling thing to show that both the board case and these trespass cases are the same. And if they are the same, then the National Relations Act preempts them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kuczynski, for your presentation. Thank all counsel for their work on this case. And we appreciate your efforts at your briefing and your oral argument here today. And would you please dismiss this case or adjourn this case for us to go in and talk about it?
All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District of Texas now stands adjourned.
You in California?
No.
See, I didn't hear that last time, so I'm not good.